Welcome back to another great episode of Comedians in Bed. And as always, you know, I have another great comedian here for you. And you know, this is a place where comedians can be comedians. And I don't really know what that means, but you know, it sounds like something you should say on a podcast, you know. But the next great comedian that we have on here, man, he's nothing short of amazing. They call him the Good Hair Bandit. Out there in LA, these people I'm hearing out in the streets, man. And so hopefully we could get some beauty techniques and hopefully some tricks and tips on how to make people laugh too, man. Give it up for the amazing Sean Porter, everybody. What's going on, man?
Thanks for having me, man.
How you doing today?
Leave-in conditioner, bro. That's it.
Is it a Head and Shoulders?
Curls. What's that one? I just go to the girl section. You get the curls.
My hair is like good enough, but I do have to use product to like get it to like curl all the way. You know.
Yeah. Exactly. But no, that's it. Just that and some.
You a vodka guy? Okay, I like tequila.
I like tequila too. I was doing that last night. This is my functional drink.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. I really. So you don't use no products at all. You just wash and go.
Bro, for real, I just wash and go, and I throw on some leave-in conditioner, and then I'm out the door. That's it.
Yeah. I used to have locks, and then after that, I had like a fro. I had a fro before then, and a fro after that. Mm-hmm. I don't think guys really realize until you have hair how much hair maintenance you have to do.
Right. Right.
Actually, it's a daily thing.
I never thought I'd do this. One day I was like a few months ago, I was using my girl's blow dryer.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm really blow drying my hair right now. That's some shit. I didn't know this was gonna come, but you know. Look, man, smoke it while you got it. You know what I'm saying? That's what I say. Why you got it, bro?
My friend, when I had my hair long the last time, she taught me what split ends were. So that was
mm-hmm.
So that was a fun, interesting time for sure. Learning what that was.
Well, my girl's a hairstylist, so she would always bring home the stuff like product to just have some of just like wasn't English. It was in English on it. I don't know if it was French or whatever was on the bottle. She was like, use this. And I was just be like, oh, okay. That's it. I didn't complain and say shit. I don't know. But really, conditioner, you know what I mean?
I don't know. As you get older, you realize you have to, you know, learn some weird stuff or, I guess, unusual stuff you didn't think you would have to learn.
I think
for me, probably was... cooking vegan food, I guess.
Oh, are you vegan?
Yeah, I'm vegetarian. Yeah. So
how long?
6 years.
Yeah. Oh shit.
Yeah. So learning that, because I always thought, you know, I'd be cooking the food that my mom made, you know, fried chicken and yams, all that type of stuff. But now nobody wants to eat my food for Thanksgiving. So
no, they're right. No, you got the small little section over there that doesn't get touched.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? No, but you're right though about that, man. Like that comfort food, I mean, it's so good, but you can't eat it every day.
Yeah.
You can't eat it every day, man. You know, you're right. I went 6 months vegetarian. I went about 6 months during COVID, but bacon got me.
Yeah.
I relapsed on bacon.
Oh, don't get it twisted, man. I'll be craving some chicken or some bacon or pepperoni, but I'll be craving that. I love that. Bro,
do they got in Columbus? Do they got the ladies that have like the street dog set up where they do the bacon wrap hot dogs? Is that a thing out there?
Nah, we're not a hot dog city. That's more like Cincinnati for coney dogs and more so like Detroit. Okay. Yeah, Columbus ain't got that.
Well, out here, like, so in LA, so there'll be like taco stands, right? They'll be set up on the street. But then also there'd be little ladies that got the hot dog little setup too. And it's the bacon wrap hot dogs. And they got the they're grilling the hot dog at the same time they're grilling like the peppers and stuff. Bro, you walk out of a bar at 2 a.m., 1:30 a.m., and you smell that shit, that bacon, it's a wrap. I didn't even stand a chance. Not one chance. I relapsed hard.
So it's not coochie that's getting you, it's bacon that's getting you.
The older I get. Yep. The older I get. It's the other things. Like coochie can wait. I gotta polish off this fucking hot dog. This booze. Like that. Appreciate the little things the older you get.
That's funny, man. Are you born in are you born and raised in LA?
Yeah, man. I'm born and raised. Yeah, born and raised in Los Angeles. Yeah.
What is how has the culture of Los Angeles made you to be the man that you are today?
It's a good question. So originally, my pops is from Detroit, and you know, he met my mom in Vietnam during the war, of course, because that's how you make Blasian. 99% of us, that's how you make Blasians. It's military too. You know what I'm saying? So then from here he moved to LA. He did, thank God he didn't go back to Detroit. I love Detroit, nothing against Detroit, but that was the best decision my dad ever made, was following his brother out here to LA. And then they had me like way later. I have three older sisters, whatever. So I was the only one born in Los Angeles. My sisters were born in Vietnam and everything. Okay. I think it's the city has, I feel like I have a built-in bullshit detector. Like I was saying it the other night, because, you know, a lot of folks come out here for the industry. And, you know, that's why, you know, LA has a certain rep about certain things when it comes to this industry. I feel like it's a lot of folks who come out here with that type of false sense of entitlement or whatever, feel like they have to act a certain way. So I tell a lot of my homies all the time, because, you know, I got a lot of comedy homies who are from other places. I tell them all the time, it's like, look, it's not us. It's not us natives, Angelinos, that are acting this way. It's not us. There's a lot of normal people out here. But also, you know, kind of growing up in the industry and, you know, some folks I know growing up, I just felt like I just can see through bullshit a lot faster and not fall for certain things, if you know what I'm saying, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because so like, and then I have my family here and stuff, so, you know, it's just very, very grounded in the city. So I don't treat it like, I get it when people move out to a certain city, like you move out here, you're you know, immediately doing this one thing, you're moving out for work, and so that's all you see is this industry. But like growing up out here, it was just normal to me with the industry almost just being in the backyard, you know, just in the background. So something that we're used to being around. So just long-winded story to say that there are good folks out here. You just got to have a good bullshit detector to sift through a lot of shit. And then I also have to understand that LA is the major leagues. And it's not, you know, some people come out here and then they forget, like, oh, shit, I actually got to work. There's a lot of very talented people out here, right? That's how people get jaded real quick. They come out here and it's like, oh, shit, I was told I was special my entire life. You know, Dime Piece comes out here and she looks around and she's like, oh, everybody's beautiful, not just me. And I'm talking about the girls and the guys.
Yeah.
He's prettier than the women. So, you know what I mean? So it's like everyone's talented out here. So you got to work just like any other profession. You got to get out here and work your ass off. You just got to bust your ass.
Yeah.
And stay away from the bullshit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Try to surround yourself with like-minded, just, you know, good people.
Have you and your family been back to, you said Vietnam?
To Vietnam. My sisters have. I'm the only one who has. Oh, my pops hasn't. But, you know, my mom is retired now, so she goes back and forth all the time. And then my sisters have been back. I haven't been back yet, but I'm rearing to go. Because, you know, they're doing English comedy shows out there now.
Yeah. And how do you How do you feel about that now, that seeing that there's another side of your culture that's getting like represented in comedy?
It's dope, man. It's funny you mention that. I'm doing an all Vietnamese show February 17th to celebrate the Lunar New Year or New Year. And some of the homies I'm doing it with, they recently, like currently in the makings of finishing up this documentary about second, third generation American Vietnamese kids who are going back over to Vietnam, setting up shop there and getting the culture, because like Ho Chi Minh City, was used to be called Saigon, is now, it's like Vietnam's almost like it's their Hong Kong. You know, they're still a communist country technically, but Ho Chi Minh City now is like their Hong Kong, really open to westernized businesses and all of that. A lot of people are setting up shop there. So, and they're doing English comedy shows out there. I got a homie out there right now doing. So yeah.
Yeah. Man. What's like your, I never.
And the dog goes a lot further out there still, Ty. So if you go out there, you can ball out for 3 weeks on like $500. So go while you can, right? It's cheap.
Hey man, I'm so broke. I can't even do 500. I ain't gonna lie to you. Made my neck itch a little bit like that. I was like, right, oh man.
Right.
What's like one of your favorite things about your Vietnamese culture? You know, I'm pretty sure being in America, you see, you experience, you know, your African American culture a lot. What's one of the things about being Vietnamese culture that you love a lot?
It's crazy because I didn't, you know, only have like one Vietnamese aunt here. You know, I really got it through my mom most of my culture growing up, you know, and then it was the black side of my family was out here. That's it. And it was just my mom where I got the culture to. I used to go to temple with her, stuff like that. She's a devout Buddhist. It's crazy because it's like, well, now we enjoy the diversity of the city. It's almost like we're in our little own bubble out here, you know, where you see mixed folks popping everywhere now. Like I see a mixed person or a Blasian from a mile away. Like now, like there's so many people popping up now. I think it's dope because back in the 90s, it was still like a rarity, you know? And so there wasn't too many of me walking around. And, you know, I was always, and I talk about this a lot in my stand-up, I was always, you know, I wasn't Asian enough, and I was definitely not black enough in terms of the outwardly presenting. And then when I started getting the industry stuff too, like I remember I got fired by my first agent because there's like, we don't know how to cast you. Mm-hmm. You're not this, you're definitely not black, and you're not Asian enough either. I'm like, well, that's why I took the stand up. I jumped on it. I was like, okay, well, I'm gonna fucking create a category then. If there isn't a box for me yet, I'm gonna have to do it myself, you know? And blaze that trail, just have that little niche. But I love my Vietnamese culture, man. It's we some dogs. I got on both sides of my family. You know, I joke about that shit all the time. It's like we're the only ones when we 2-0 when it comes to war.
I kicked out the
French and Uncle Sam, kicked out both these brown guys, bro. Like we got heart, bro.
One of the things I love about comedy is that I didn't expect it coming in, but like you learn so much about different cultures and just different things out in the world. Like this, this is the most diversity I've ever like been around, at least for my own scene, and then going to different scenes too.
Multiple platforms now. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. How has like being able to express who you are and then at the same time learning other people, how has that, I guess, change your outlook on life?
Mm-hmm. If it wasn't for comedy, I wouldn't have the diverse group of the voices and friends in my circle for sure. Like I'm like good friends with one of the top trans comics in the country right now. A couple of them actually that I've met. You know, so many people in the LGBTQ community that have accepted me, just comedy homies, just from hanging out at these clubs and just being funny. That was the only entry, the only membership to the club, is just be funny and you're in, and regardless of where you came from, you know. So, you know, I just did a LGBTQ show last month, one of my homies' show, you know. I was the token straight guy. I was like, I'll be that idiot, you know what I mean? All good, you know, doing those rooms, doing diverse rooms like that. That's another thing too. So dope for comedy, because you want to have access to every tool in the tool belt. Sometimes you can get stuck working just a certain room and you won't know how to do another room. I love doing black and brown shows. I'll do an all black show. I'll do a Hispanic show. I'm doing an all Vietnamese show coming up in a couple weeks. It's good to be in those shows because you need those tools. You know what I mean? I think some comics, a lot of times, like if I work, like I work the club circuit out here, if I do too many of those rooms, you know, and I'll just say if they're doing two of those white rooms, you know, then I'm like, okay, I gotta go find my people. I gotta go make black and brown folks laugh.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you get stuck doing the same room too much. So that's help. That's definitely just being in this industry, man. There's so many dope people.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think I've had so many curious questions about people until I started doing comedy. Like
we're observational by nature.
Yeah.
That's our job.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a friend out here in the scene. I can't remember. Forgive me if he's demisexual or pansexual. I think he's demisexual, and I'd be asking hella quick. I'm like, okay, what that mean? Right. like break it down to me. Like, you know what I'm saying? Just right. I don't know. I guess because you got like a common camaraderie, which is being funny, and then you like, okay, I guess we can get to know each other. Like, tell me about yourself, and you get to learn people, and it's like, wow, we're not really all that different, you know.
I love green rooms. Those are the best conversations. Just being in the back, chilling. And like you said, when you have time, you have that downtime, just getting to know people. Those are the best conversations. I hate small talk. The comedy has spoiled me, too, because I fucking hate small talk with regular people, with normies. I can't stand it. I'm like, oh, this drives me nuts. Like, get me out of here. Like, just normies and shit, like a work function. Like, when I used to have a day job, like shit like that, or I'm just out and just like a regular ass cocktail party, and this is like the whole getting to know in 20 questions. I'm like, give me a comic, please. You know what I mean? Because we don't give a fuck. We just talk shit, and we're just interesting people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Working all those rooms, leading you to be, you know, found and, you know, having success with and getting to know like people you probably looked up to or your peers or anything like that.
Yeah.
When you keep going in this journey and you get acknowledged by one of your peers, how does that personally make you feel? Because I'm like only 4 years in. However, you have more years than that. So like, how does that make you feel as you keep going along on this journey?
Well, I call them my OGs. I got my OGs, my big bros. They still refer to me as a baby. They still call me a baby in the industry. And I've been doing what, 8-9 years? Like hard, like full time. And they still call me a fucking kid in this industry. Cause I'm in some rooms where comics, I'm talking about 15, 17, 20 plus years in the game. So they're like, oh shit, you've still fucking wet behind the ears. You know what I mean? But then I have my peers and the younger comics now that'll come to me. You know, and so I try to pay it forward. Some of the big the OGs who looked out for me to help guide me, I try to, you know, do the same, pay it forward to comics who I see who are out here doing it. Not to everybody. If I see you out in these streets busting your ass trying to get better every day, then it's like, you know, then do like the OGs did for me. That is the best compliment you can get, is when your peers, you're respected by your peers. I think the best compliment I'll ever get is if someone says, you know, Sean's a comics comic. I'll take that. I can die happy man. You know, I do some, like I have a commercial theatrical agent. So I've done a few like acting things and stuff. And I have a lot of homies out here that do both. And I have a good friend who's who's more known as an actor than a comic, but you know, he's doing both right now. He's fucking blowing up, and he's always like, man, we got to, you know, put together, you know, some projects and shit. You got to get on the screen more and all that. I was like, you know, I'm good right now. I'm mm-hmm. okay with that stuff. If it comes, it comes. But this is comedy and joke writing for me. That is my passion. I'd rather be at a diner at 1-2 a.m. with the homies, just talk about how stupid the night was or the show or whatever, than going on auditions and shit. You know, I just want to be known as just a good joke writer and a comics comic, and you know, then I'm good. Respecting my peers. Yeah, that's to your point. I agree.
Speaking to it, man. Speaking to what you just said, it's not that many nights out here where I really feel like a real comic. You know, those mm-hmm. nights, but it's really only when I like go out of this scene here. Like,
yeah,
when I go to LA, I remember
get to
when
the coast. Yeah,
like when I went to LA, like I try to. Well, I go to LA like every year, and I hit mics, and I went last year, mm-hmm. and I was like up for like 24 hours just from the time difference, and by the time I got back to my Airbnb and went to sleep. First time at like the Comedy Store and just chasing mics, hitting mics, and I was like, man, I really feel, you know, like a comic. So I love when I'm out there in that scene and things of that nature. You know, it's really the camaraderie. Like, it's like, okay, these are nights that I kind of like live for. They don't really come often here in Columbus. So I do love those.
We gotta get you out here, bro.
Yeah. I'm out there every year, man. I'll be coming out there for Coachella, but this year I'm only going to probably go to one day at Coachella because the lineup is pretty trash.
That's what everyone's been telling me.
It's pretty trash, man. I'm like, I'm going the last day.
Bro, my Coachella days are over, man. I can't. I'm like, look, I get allergies and shit now. I can't be no dusty ass motherfucking field, bro. I can't do that shit no more, bro. But I'll be at the parties, though. If I get invited to the party, I'm there. I'll do all that other shit.
Yeah.
But I ain't even, you know, dusty ass fairgrounds, bro. I can't.
That's funny, man. That's funny. But one thing I really admire about you is that you have your own. This, okay, yeah, you really got to explain this to me. Like, how did this happen? Because you have, I know it's probably been around, the new Ice House has been around for like probably a year or going on a year. But so you have your own night, and it's on a Saturday night. Like, how did we get this with the Sean Porter and friends? Like, how did you get a Saturday night at a club?
Very fortunate, too. Very fortunate, man, because I was, when I, you know, heard the rumblings that it was reopening there during COVID, I was like, oh, man, I got to get on the ground floor of this shit. You know what I mean? Because the Ice House is an LA institution. It's the oldest comedy club in the country. You know, a lot of folks don't know that. 1960 is when it opened. So it was an LA institution. I grew up going there. My uncles used to go there. And so then when Johnny Buss took it over, that's who took it over. You know, he's the oldest family member of the Buss family. He owns the Lakers. He grew up going there with his dad. And that's the backstory. His dad was one regret is that he never got to own a comedy club. They're big comedy fans. So he always wanted to do it. So when it came available during COVID, that's when he took it over and then just renovated it now. So it's a super sexy venue. I was lucky enough to get on the ground floor. Like I think their anniversary is coming up. February 16th is the day they opened. I was there the following weekend doing a house show. And the booker at the time, Allie Lerman, she's out in Texas now, running another club. But shout out to my homegirl Allie. She saw something in me, just from being out in these other clubs. There was like, you know, we got to get you in here. You know, you have it. We're trying to. You know, as they told me, as the owner told me too, and they said, like, you know, we're trying to have the next big comic come out of the Ice House, you know, and we want to get behind that shit, you know. And so they saw something. And I used to run shows before that too, just around town. Like, I used to run shows, a place called El Cid, which is another LA historical landmark. That place was like established like 1929. Like, they actually have a plaque on the fucking wall, like, you know, historical landmark. I used to run shows there. They do like burlesque shows and shit there. I used to run shows in that theater. I used to run my show at Flappers over in Burbank. And then this is when the Ice House came calling after I did that house show. I looked into it and they were like, yeah, you know, if you bring good business, you know, they'll fuck with you, you know, put asses in seats. And so I'm also fortunate to have a lot of friends and like OGs who would because they're usually on the road. But if they're here on a Saturday, they'll pull up and I don't have to go through management and all other people and shit. And like, yeah, I got you. So they'll pull up and do guest spots. And then just over the year, we just built a following because there's a lot of folks in that go to the Ice House that, again, grew up going there, generations and shit, and they're just normal LA people. They're not industry. So the place feels like a road club in Los Angeles. I tell a lot of these comics this, they're like, yo, this fucking crowd is popping. I was like, I know, it's because it feels like you're doing a road gig because you're actually performing in front of some normies and not just industry. Because a lot of the times we perform at the Comedy Store or the Improv all the time, then you're like, oh, fuck, why am I feels like my jokes are getting stale? No, it's not that. It's just you performing in front of dudes, people who are just sometimes industry folks don't laugh. And they sit here like this. I'd literally be like, I've heard me like, oh, that's funny. I laugh, motherfucker. I'd be like, you know what I'm saying? Like people in industry be like, oh, yeah, that's a funny joke. I'm like, but won't laugh. Mm-hmm. So it's one thing performing in front of industry, which we still need to do. But then also getting out there in front of normal folks and cracking people up. And that's what the Ice House is. And, you know, again, you know, the Bluss family, they know how to run a fucking good business. And so, that, yeah, man. So I've been rocking ever since.
What is the key to running a good show in a club? And then before I forget, also, what's the difference between the old Ice House and this version of the Ice House?
Sexier. I love, okay, the old Ice House had nostalgia, so you can like smell the years on the walls, right? That's like kind of like the Comedy Store and the Improv, right? But like mm-hmm. a lot of, like the Comedy Store too, you know, like they say that shit is haunted. And mm-hmm. hey, low key, Ty, a few months ago, I swear to God, I thought I saw a ghost. I swear, bro. It was a late show. I swear, bro. That shit is haunted. But like good haunted though. Like when you go in the OR, like the original room, like mm-hmm. I tell these younger comics all the time when they first go up to the OR, I'm like, listen, you're not performing in front of these people here in the crowd. You're performing in front of these names on the wall. That's who I'm performing for. That's who I'm trying to get the respect of. These fucking names on the wall. I'm performing in front of these ghosts. And you feel that fucking comedy energy. You feel that. Is the comedy gods just pouring into you. But anyway, so you feel so the Ice House had that also that old feel to it, nostalgic feel to it. You see the years everywhere, right? Like I did my first feature there. I did my first 12-minute spot. I was like, oh my, when I was starting, I was like, oh my, 12 minutes, I was shitting bricks. And those days. And so just to come full circle. So running a show at a club, not every comic can produce a show. It's not meant for every comic. Just like not every comic could host or should host, not every comic can produce. I come from an entertainment background. Like before I started doing comedy, I was in this whole other part of entertainment where I was working in entertainment behind the cameras, like a branding producer for a few shows and stuff. I used to work events and stuff like that. So that was always been my background. So that stuff has always come easy to me, like natural to me. Mm-hmm. So running a show, and especially at a club, rule number one, two, three, four, and five is put asses in seats. That's rule one, two, three, four, five. Asses in seats. Mm-hmm. This is a business at the end of the day. As funny as you are, as funny as we are, if you're not bringing business, don't matter, right?
Yeah.
Also, though, you got to be on top of your shit. And so, like, when I do my shows, I don't host my own shows. I got some homies that will produce. They want to host and be in control of everything. That's another spot to get a homie up, you know, to host. But I want to make sure that the room's good. folks are happy, folks are drinking and eating, and the comics are happy too. So I take care of comics that night. So all my gigs are paid gigs. So they leave them with cash in their hand, cash. Even if I have to go get it out of my bank account, it's not one of the things where I'm going to wait. Yeah, wait 3 months to get a fucking Venmo or some shit. You know what I mean? Like, nah, it's cash in your hand, couple drink tickets, you know, because in comics, the fuck with that. And you know, I have a videographer shoot my shows too, an amazing videographer. This guy's my partner in crime, and he's blowing up too. You can barely book that guy now. And you get your tape free for my show. So like, comics talk, right? We are always talking. It's a small world, even though it's a big city. And when we're talking about, hey, what shows people fuck with, you know, I want to make sure that they're good at the end of the night. Like, yo, I rocked it. It was a hot fucking crowd. Rocked it. Got money in my pocket tonight. You know, got a tape already. And it was just a fun time. So you got to be on your shit and just get good business.
That's good information. Now that you're in a position of power, how has that transition been? Because, you know, when we're comics, when we're first starting out, nobody really talks to us, nobody really rocks with us. But now that you're in a position of power, how has that transition been from like people not knowing you to people now wanting to get to know you?
It's funny, man. It's a trip, bro. you know how some fake ass motherfuckers be, man. Oh, I can tell you. I'll tell you when I see you in person, we will tell some stories. But no, it's interesting. Like, I'm still not, like, I was just saying this the other night, like, I'm not known, but I'm comedy known.
Yeah.
So if you're a comedy fan or comedy nerd, or you were just in the game as a comic, you know, yeah, that's my name, knock on wood. It has good rep. People know me. I can get in places and shit. Cool. But now that, you know, on the bell of the ball, like this past year, you know, everybody, you know, this is the word going around about, you know, how hot the show was. You see my DMs, dude. It's listen, I know why now, like, the DMs have taken down many a great men, and I get it. Some motherfuckers are like, oh, hell no, I'm not getting fallen in that trap. Like, fuck that.
Yeah.
Bro, but you know, sometimes it still happens now, though. Like, it happened a couple months ago. I was in this, but you know, I think we're, I was doing a gig in Santa Barbara or whatever, but we're in the green room, and I'm just, you know, being nice, polite, but I'm just minding my own business. I'm hanging out. I'm headlining the show. I'm sitting there, you know, I'm just getting my set list prepared. Just keeping to myself. And there are, you know, comics who I haven't seen out here, who really didn't know me, and just completely just ignored me the entire time. Right? They had their own little in circle the entire time, just not fucking with me. And then they're like, all right, and here's your headliner tonight, you know, Sean Porter. And I go up there and I do 30. I just murder, a crush. I come back and now they're all, oh my God, oh, what's your Instagram? And all trying to talk to me and shit and get to know me and all this shit because they heard my credits, what I do. And then I went up and rocked it. I'm like, I was sitting here this entire fucking time. Not one of you motherfuckers was saying anything to me.
Yeah.
And not too racially profiled, but usually in those type of rooms, if that's the type of fake shit, it's not racially profiling, but you know what I'm, you know, look. You know who the folk they are. You know, because it doesn't matter. Yeah. Like, it's so funny. The different green rooms too. Like, just doing like a black show in that green room versus an all white show in that green room. Too much anxiety and insecurity in that green room. We over here talk about Lakers and LeBron and, you know, smoking weed and having a good time and shit. Most of the time, people are chilling. Like, yeah, I'm not saying we have our own insecurities. Yes, I'm not saying that.
Yeah,
whole different level over here. Anyway, so that still happens, man. So I've always had the mentality. This has always been my, I don't know any other way to live. I guess how I was raised or just whatever. But like, I treat the valet guy the same way as I'll treat you know, an A-lister. Doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. You just see a person's humanity and just keep it real with people. Just be a nice person and work your ass off has always been my motto. And that goes a lot further than any fucking resume, is what I've learned. Just being a kind person and working your ass off goes way further than any fucking shit you got on your resume. It's gotten me to places where I didn't know nobody, but I was just a nice person, you know, getting to know everybody.
Yeah. I'm just now getting in green rooms, man. So I don't say anything. I say, hey, and I just write my little notes on my notepad. Like, that's until I get spoken to.
Bro, especially when I'm in a room with killers, like when I'm in those rooms, I don't say shit. I shut up. I listen. You know what I mean? I respect those who come before me because I study. I'm a student of comedy. So I don't say shit. I don't act like I know shit. I'm just sitting there and then only speak when spoken to. Like you said, that's it. When I'm in those fucking rooms, because I just absorb. Yeah. You know, I just listen. I just take it in. You know.
Yeah. How do you? So like here, like I don't really feel like I get the full comedy experience because we don't do things, I guess, like the normal way. Like our clubs don't really have, I mean, they have regulars, but they don't have like a regular night and stuff like that. So every time I go to like a major comedy city,
they're
like
road clubs, right? It's all the road clubs, those clubs out there, right? The road clubs. So guys are doing weekends and headliners, national headliners,
So when you're out, you know, you live in LA and things like that, how do you, I forgot what question I was going to ask.
Oh, it's all good.
No, you're fine. Let's see. All right. So when you're out there and you're doing like your shows and everything, it came back to me. How do you like make sure that your name is relevant enough in a city where your name matters the most?
That's a good point. Right. It's this is why this is the hardest market to crack. You know, I don't know how many OGs told me, you go start in New York. That's where you're supposed to go start. The reason why you're supposed to start in New York is because they got more shows than comics. You know, they got shit tons of comics. What I'm saying is, though, is that they got so many shows going, you know, you can go work 5-6 sets a night because everything's within a 3-mile radius. Work 5-6 sets a night, that shortcuts your learning curve. That shortcuts your learning curve as a comic.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to in LA, you can't do, if I have a gig at the Laugh Factory in Long Beach, and then I got to be back over to the Improv in Hollywood, I'm only doing 2 shows that night. It's, you know what I mean? Logistically impossible. Unless you're like a paid regular at a club, like the store or whatever, then you can get in all 3 rooms and shit, or the Improv, then you can get up multiple times, but you'll be at 1 club. As opposed to New York, you can hit multiple bars, clubs, all of that in one night. You know what I mean? So that's a good way to shortcut your path. And then also out here, you're competing against A-listers because this is their open mic room. This is their playground. They all live out here. So they use the Comedy Store to hone their next hour, or, you know, they use that as their gym before they hit the road.
Mm-hmm.
So then you got to compete for them with stage time. So now it's like, oh shit. So it's a tough market to crack. But again, bro, if you love the journey, you got to love the fucking journey. You got to love the journey because it's going to be a while. So there's no such thing as overnight success, right? You know, as they say, right? Overnight success, 18 years in the making, right? You see somebody just pop off all of a sudden, like, yo, just came out like a comic, like a comet. I guarantee you that person's been grinding for 18 fucking years to get to that moment, right? Mm-hmm. So you just have to buy into that and love the journey, because if you love the journey, then it's not work. Then the shit isn't like, oh, I've been doing this for so fucking long. When is it gonna? I just enjoy the journey, man.
What's your definition of success as a comedian?
Mm-hmm. Being known as a comics comic. Like I said, that, and then my goal is to make the name, you know, have my name on the wall at the store and have my picture go up at the Ice House. And that's my goal, you know, get my name on the wall and just be known as a good shit talker, you know. Yeah. If it comes when you write, when you, as they say in life, like if you're passionate about something, the money will come. It's when people think it's the other way around, when they think it's the other way around, that's you're not doing it the right way. It's gonna lead to failure. When you're thinking, if I do X, Y, Z, then the money will come. Then I'll be happy. No, it's, you gotta be passionate about something, then everything else will follow.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So for me, that's success. And if the shit comes, you know, that's fine. Like I said, I've been in the room with Kevin Hart, and he's shared some of his, he's working on his new hour right now and shit, but he shares some of this stuff. And I was like, man, I don't want that life.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? He's a business, bro. He's a business. And he has 300 miles of feet.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Like he was venting to us, you know, the comics. He's like, you know, you guys, he's like, I'm jealous of how, where you guys are right now. He says, because I used to just go on the stage, talk shit for 15 minutes and then leave. He's like, now, if something pops off and I don't say something, here comes everybody. Kevin, you don't use your fucking voice to say, why didn't you say shit about this? You got to use your voice. He goes, if I do say something, then it's like, who the fuck are you to say something about this? You an elite, you all the way up here. You don't know how we're struggling. He's like, so I can't say shit. I guess can't talk shit and then go home.
Yeah.
I was like,
I think last year, that's when I realized for me to really enjoy the journey. Cause you know, sometimes you might be like, oh, why is this taking so long or whatever your gripes right. may be. But last year I was just like, man, it's probably going to be like 20 years from now where I'd be like, man, you remember that time we was low on gas and we smoking weed going to the mic and we barely got up. You know what I'm saying? Like those going to be the nights. That you know,
that's what you're gonna talk about.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what you're gonna talk about. You're not gonna talk about the top when you're at the top. You're not gonna talk about that shit. You're gonna talk about, yo, yeah, we was fucking ran out of gas and barely made the gig. And remember this fucking idiot Booker and all this shit pop. Like, that's what we're gonna talk about. It's the journey, not when you're not the top.
I think I actually realized, the moment I realized that was when I was in LA last year and I was with my friend Shayna, and obviously we was smoking outside on Sunset Boulevard, and I'm like, bro, we're smoking outside Sunset Boulevard, about to like go to the Comedy Store. Like, this is, I'm having fun. I don't know. I'm having a ball right now. Like, this is, you know, the everything, you know.
That's good, man. I'm glad you took that in. That's why I tell you all the time too. Being present for me is like the best form of therapy and meditation in the world for me. It's being present. The only two places I'm really most present is when I'm on stage, at the club, or like I box for a hobby. So I'm an avid boxer. When I'm in the ring, because that's also a great form of therapy, because when there's another grown-ass man trying to take your head off, all your today's problems go away. It's funny how that works. When there's another grown-ass man standing in front of you, trying to take your face off, all them problems that you had that day, gone.
Yeah. You know what
I mean? Yeah. And I'm also that present when I'm on stage too, just being in the moment. And so just you taking it in too, that's also tell people when you hit that stage at the store, like as you're up there, take it in. Just take all of that in. So you smoking weed right in front of the comic store, like, come on, that's the best thing. That was me 2 nights ago. That was me last night. Literally last night.
Yeah,
out in front of the store, and then we dipped over to Laugh Factory, my homie Teron's birthday show, and star stud. He packed it out, bro. I mean, there wasn't an empty seat. I mean, everybody was out. Chris Tucker pulled up. Russell Peters pulled up. I'm just enjoying that moment too. Just hanging out with comics.
Yeah.
Like, oh shit, look at Chris Tucker just pulling up. Like, I don't take that for granted. I'm glad you have that same mentality, because that's the type of mentality it's going to take to persevere all these years. You got to have that mentality.
Yeah, I've been taking that in my personal life. I think because my therapist told me, you know, when I have my depression episodes, that's me dwelling on the past. When I'm anxious, that's me dwelling on the future. And ever since she broke it down to me like that, I was like, all right, every day I just want to strive to be in the moment that I'm in. I'm not going to worry about yesterday. I'm not going to worry about tomorrow. Mm-hmm. You don't even know if you're going to wake up tomorrow. So just focus on the day, whatever tasks that you have for today. And that's made life a lot easier.
Yeah, I wear therapy on my sleeve. I'm glad to 7 years for me. 7 years.
Yeah.
And that's true. I mean, so many times people just think about past and then the future all the time, right? Mine's never here.
Yeah.
You know, so comedy is a good tool along with therapy, but comedy is a great tool to practice that muscle of presence. That's what crowd work is.
Yeah. Right?
Crowd work, that's what hosting gigs are. Producing is being in the room, the moment, current moment, this living, breathing organism that's this room, and paying attention to everything that's going on. And so that creates that tool of being present.
Yeah.
It helps. Yeah.
What's one stage that you dream about hitting? Like for me, it would be like having a show like at Ohio Stadium, one of the biggest stadiums in the world, United States. So what's one stage that you
have they ever done a comedy show there? Do they do?
I don't. They shows just, like that? They just started doing concerts like probably a decade ago. Okay. So they started to do some more stuff there, but they've never done a comedy show though. Not that I know of.
That'd be dope. Well, for me, the other, you know, the equivalent to the Comedy Store in New York, you know, the Comedy Cellar. I haven't done that stage. That's definitely on my bucket list. Because, you know, it's the store and the cellar, right? Those are, you know, two legendary rooms. And I'll be headlining in New York for the first time in April at the West Side Comedy Club. So I'm going to be out there all week booking gigs and stuff. So I'm definitely going to pull up to the cellar. But the goal is to actually, you know, be a regular there. And then also Canada. I'm doing my first gig in Canada coming up too, early April in Ottawa. But, you know, JFL is something that, you know, that comedy festival out there in Montreal, I'd love to do at some point in the near future.
Yeah. I'm trying to dip my toe into Canada too. I keep forgetting every time I go to Detroit that Canada's right there.
Right there.
Yeah.
Right there. I did four nights. I did three nights in Buffalo this past September at the Helium. And Canada's right there.
Yeah.
Like, literally right there. And man, I love Canadians, man. Like, I'm gonna be in Ottawa here soon. On the West Coast, we have Vancouver, which is about 2.5 hours, just 2.5 hour flight from LA. And I tell all the homies, like, look. This is, I don't know why this space is not being talked about more. Like, especially if you're a single dude, this place is where you need to fucking go. It's tough to get in. If you have any type of record, they won't fuck with you. The customs is just a DUI, bro. If that shit's a DUI, they won't let you in. But if you can get in, if you got a clean record, this spot is like unspoken, and they're big comedy fans there too. And just gorgeous international cities. Gorgeous international cities. If you're a single dude, get your ass to Canada.
Yeah, I'm trying to move to Canada. Like, when I have a family, because I don't feel safe in America. But so that's why I'm like, I need to start getting my foot in Canada now with comedy, because it's, you know, just to make that transition. But also, I just always hear so many great things about it, you know. So,
bro, I definitely want to experience that. Since 2016, I was looking into. Does Canada take refugees? How long do I have to take to get my citizenship? What is it going to take? Just trust me. I looked at all that shit. I'm looking at New Zealand and Australia too, because Melbourne's supposed to be an awesome city, and they got out there too. I'm looking at all this shit. Trust me. Since 2016, I'm like, shit. I'm ready to bug out. Shit pops off. I was like, how do I get to Vancouver? I was like, all right, I got to get to Seattle. And then kayak my ass over into Vancouver. Hopefully they'll take me as a refugee. If shit
take off the goes weed. To shit.
Right.
Sean, as we start to wrap things up here, man. Who is on your Mount Rushmore for comedy?
Oh man, I was just talking about that the other day. Oh man, mine's ever changing. because I'm such a fan of so many comics. I really am. Because I have a, I have like a dead guy Rushmore, and then I have like a current Rushmore. You know what I mean? And then I have a female Rushmore. But I'm such fans of so many comics. You know, of course, you know, Dave Chappelle, you know, I know that recent shit that he's on right now. Is Father Time undefeated? Is this the, did you just eventually age out of being cool? I don't know. Anyway, he was always my GOAT. Chris Rock is a tremendous talent. I mean, I go back in real time. I wasn't watching George Carlin because I was too young in real time. But I've gone back to watch him and study him. And Carlin was a fucking prophet. And, you know, such an amazing wordsmith. Every single word. You want to talk about the economy of joke structure, the economy of words. Every single word had a purpose in his setup to punch. Every single word. No wasted words. Amazing. I'm a huge fan of Patton Oswalt, Bill Burr, Mike Epps makes me cry. Like Mike Epps, Patton Oswalt make me fucking cry laughing. Ali Wong is killing it. I'm a big fan of Conan O'Brien. Conan O'Brien is like my Dave Letterman, like of my generation.
Really?
Group watching Conan. Man, I watch the school of self-deprecation, like self-deprecating yourself, like that. I went to Conan O'Brien's school of self-deprecation. Mm. He's the best at it. And I, you know, part of stand-up, like part of my act is, you know, I shit on myself a lot, make fun of myself a lot, and bring the room together that way by, hey, because remember, I'm still the clown up here. I'm the clown. Everybody laugh at me. Joke's on me. And that helps me, you know, not take myself too seriously. So that's so self-deprecation is something that's always part of my act. I learned that from, like, Conan's a goat at it. Went back and watched Richard Pryor, you know. Currently, who else? Currently, I'm trying to think. I said Bill Burr, Patton Oswalt's my guy. Mike Epps is fucking hilarious. Sarah Silverman, I fuck with. So many comics, man. I just can't think of right now. But Jerry Seinfeld, who I share a birthday with. The best observational comic probably ever. Here's the crazy thing about Jerry Seinfeld. We don't know shit about Jerry Seinfeld. It's all observations. You don't know, right? Ask me, you know, one personal thing about him, right? As opposed to, like, you know, Richard Pryor, who is the GOAT at, he was the GOAT. The reason why I call him the GOAT is because he was so vulnerable up there. He put his entire blood, sweat, and tears. He exposed it for the world and made it funny. That's why they say, you know, in comedy that once you reach that level of when you can be yourself, but funny up there, when you find your voice and like being vulnerable and being that open, that takes a few years to do. I'm still learning that and getting better at that vulnerability, you know, vulnerability comedy. He was the GOAT at that. But then Seinfeld, the exact opposite, just all observations. Hilarious, but we don't know shit about him. Too many comics could do that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I want to go back to where you said Conan O'Brien, because I used to watch Jay Leno. And then when Jay Leno went off air, I started watching Conan because I just thought he was freaking funny. Like, he wasn't on main TV, but I just thought he was funny. Yeah. And I've never heard anybody else talk about Conan. And to my surprise, one of my favorite comics, Deion Cole, was actually one of his writers on the show.
Yes, he was.
So it's kind of like,
yes, he was.
My favorites are like teaming up. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah.
Deion was on his show, man. That's he, and Deion's a good dude too. And like that for me would be the, like, a dream scenario. If I can go write on a show, write for a late night show, write or something like that during the day, and then go ahead and then Twilight at night and hit the clubs. That's what Deion did for years.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know, yeah. And yeah, he's a good dude, man. And Conan surrounds himself with like just good people. But like Conan was like, you know, just the zany fucking sketches that he would do and just off the wall shit, dude. Like, I go back and still watch that shit when I was cracking up as a kid, like still watch it on YouTube today. Like the other day I was watching the masturbating bear sketches that he used to do on the old show. Like, just so dumb, just master, like, just like you come up in a right. Like, that's my dream, to be in a writer's room and to think of a sketch like masturbating bear. Just, you know what I'm saying? To be in a room, is like, we have a dude in a bear suit and a big ass diaper that just plays with his balls to music. Like, and just, and that's your job. And you get paid for thinking some shit like that. You know what I mean?
I don't know, Sean. That sounds like a little cocaine hit. That's what that sound like, a little cocaine smack, man. What about a bear masturbating? Like, whoa, calm down, buddy. Just right. Eat the donut. Just
and it crushed. You know what I'm saying?
Sean, what is some words of encouragement you can give to any comedian listening to this right now?
Oh, words of encouragement. I would say, like I said earlier, enjoy the journey. Enjoy this shit. It's going to take a while. And it should take a while. Because if you're fucking get good at anything, practice. You can't life hack it. You can't cheat code it. Because eventually you'll get exposed. The comedy guys will always expose you. We're seeing that now. We're seeing that now with a lot of these TikTok guys. I do some shows with these guys. Some of these guys, good dudes, but like, they like, oh, I found the cheat code. I don't have to go through the store and the improv and cut my teeth that way because I got 2 million followers. And then the club books them. Because they can put asses in seats. It's business, I get it. But then they go up there for 15 minutes to eat dick. You can't sit in the 30-second clips. Don't equate to a 15-minute set. They're two separate sports. You're playing two different sports. Anyway, so just love the journey and surround yourself with other good people and ambitious people because birds of a feather, as they say. You want to surround yourself with people who, you know, are about the grind, have that ambition, but also have a good moral compass. And I'm not saying you have to be a fucking Quaker looking. I'm not saying all that shit. Like, listen, I've been drinking through this whole podcast. I drink at the strip club with the homies. I'm no fucking saint. But that's all part of the journey. It's all part of it.
Message.
yeah, man, and just try to get better every single day. And then, oh, and also real quick, it's baseball. It's 162 games. It's a marathon, meaning one fucking gig isn't gonna make or break you. It's not gonna be death. A lot of comics, we get too inside our fucking heads like that. I'm like, yo, this shit is baseball. You eat dick today, that's fine. You went 0 for 4 today, but the awesome thing is you get to go live to fight another. You can go get back in the on plate tomorrow. That's the great thing about it. You get to go back tomorrow, and tomorrow you might go 2 for 4. And then the next day you're gonna hit for the cycle. But you get to live to fight another day. You get to go up at bat the next night to redeem yourself. And that's fun. And learn from the past, learn from tonight, and go up and then kill it. And then some nights you're gonna be shitty crowds you can't do anything about. Because you don't know what that person's going through. Like, there's always somebody in the front row at the store, the improv. It could be a fucking ice house in a stadium. Doesn't matter. A bar, doesn't matter. There's always one person like this, Ty. Not laughing and shit. And you're like, are you laughing on the inside? Like, yo, do you know where you're at? There's always one person. But I don't. What therapy teaches is that I don't know what that person went through today. That person also, he's sitting in the front row, might have anxiety being in the front row. So they're very defensive. I don't know what they're going through. So I'm not going to lash out at them. It's okay.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Some nights you just have shitty nights. That's all a part of it. But it's baseball. And you get to go up back the next night.
I feel as if I'm really good at analogies. And I've never had a baseball analogy. Well, lets me know that you really love baseball.
Because... actually, I played football in college and ran track. Baseball is probably my fourth favorite, but yeah, I'm a sports fan, I guess. I don't know, but yeah.
Yeah, no, it's fine. It was a good one. I'm gonna steal it.
Yeah, please do. More comments need to hear that shit.
Hey, Sean, tell people why they should listen to Comedians in Bed.
You should listen to Comedians in Bed because Ty is doing a good thing with helping out other comics, get to know other comics, and then also the inside. And because if one person listening to this, one comic who feels like, oh, shit, I'm not going anywhere. Oh, I did suck dick last night. And they hear this, hopefully that'll give them some insight and help them out. And like, oh, you know, I get to live the fight another day. And if changes somebody's perspective, then I've done my job. And then you're doing the Lord's work by doing this and putting that out there. So I didn't know we were supposed to be doing podcasts in bed. I would have moved it to my other room. I am in my boxers right now, though. So this is cool, man. We're done already?
Yeah, tell people where they can meet you at, find you at.
Yeah, on IG, at I Am Sean Porter, S-E-A-N, and monthly at the Ice House. I'll be headlining West Side Comedy Club April 11th in New York City. Pull up. Also, I will be at the Laugh Lounge in Ottawa, Canada, April 5th and 6th. I can't announce it yet. It's not official yet. Well, it is kind of, but I'm going to wait till it's official. But let's just say, and your boy got on a festival out here in Los Angeles that pops off in May that is a part of a very popular streaming platform. So
there it is.
Catch me there too.
There it is, man. If you want to catch next week's episode, go ahead and subscribe to my YouTube channel at TYE Comedy. Or if you want to catch weekly clips, you can go ahead and follow us on IG at Comedians in Bed Podcast. And you can stream us wherever you listen to podcasts. We want to thank my man Sean once again. Be sure to follow him on all things social and hit him up if you're in that LA area or New York or soon to be Canada or wherever he's going to be at. Just check him out and make sure that you heard him on Comedians in Bed. Sean, man, we want to thank you one more time for being on the show. Guys, we'll see you guys next week.
Thanks, bro. We out in these streets, baby. Thanks, Ty.